coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
A Lutheran Walk Through London with Pastor Roy Long.
The last leg of our journey around Lutheran London will take us into the heart of the City of London to the site of the so-called Strangers Church at Austin Friars, and then back to St Anne and St Agnes Church, where we started our walk. From the site of the Steelyard, turn right along Upper Thames Street and cross at the next set of lights to go up Arthur Street. Bear to the left onto Martin Lane. Go along this to Cannon Street and turn right, walking to a set of lights to cross Cannon Street. Then cross King William Street. Turn left to walk up King William Street and take the second right onto Nicholas Lane. At the end of Nicholas Lane, turn left and cross at the lights twice to turn down Old Broad Street. This brings us to the site of the Strangers Church, and there is a stone with a commemorative inscription in Dutch on the lower right-hand side of the front of the church that stands there now. The Strangers Church was the first church in London in which foreign Protestant services could be legally held. Early reforming influences in the days of Henry VIII were from Wittenberg. The first translations of the Bible into English were made by scholars who were sympathetic to Luther, and men such as Robert Barnes and William Tyndale were close friends with Lutheran scholars. However, in a nation which can best be described as a royal despotism, the name which was of ultimate importance was that of the king, and Henry VIII was not really very favourable towards continental reformers, unless it happened to suit him at any particular time. British coins still bear the royal title Fidei Defensor, usually abbreviated to FIDF or simply FD, reminding us that Henry wrote a book called Acetio Septem Sacramentorum, in which he attacked Luther's pagan servitude of the church, and that he was duly awarded this title by the Pope to recognise his service against the heretics. The Reformation in England was not, in the end, Lutheran, although the Church of England, as it emerged under Queen Elizabeth I, bore strong similarities to the Lutheran churches of Northern Europe. Henry VIII died in 1547 and was succeeded by his 9-year-old son, Edward VI. Unlike his father, who was a traditionalist and is perhaps best described as an anti-papal Catholic, and his older half-sister, the Lady Mary, who stubbornly remained Roman Catholic, Edward had been brought up as a Protestant. His short reign of 6 years witnessed major reforms in the English Church, including the publication of Thomas Cranmer's great triumph, the Book of Common Prayer. But it also saw the increasing growth of reformed influence. Look at the two communion services produced during Edward's reign. The first, from 1548, is similar to Lutheran services, whereas that of 1552 has moved noticeably towards practices in Switzerland. However, these reforms were short-lived, and under Mary I, who succeeded Edward on his premature death in 1553, there was a serious and bloody attempt to restore Roman Catholicism. During this period of Catholic reaction, reforming churchmen were forced to flee abroad, and the majority ended up in reformed communities. On Mary's death in 1558, her younger half-sister Elizabeth came to the throne, and these churchmen returned to England determined to reform the church along the reformed lines that they'd seen in Germany. It says a lot about Elizabeth and her ministers that they managed to set the Church of England onto a path which tried to avoid the extremes of Catholicism or Swiss Reformed theology. and produce a church which in some ways at least resembled the North European Lutheran churches. During this whole period, scholars and churchmen who favoured reform had to be mobile. Sometimes this was a voluntary mobility. British scholars went to study at European universities. European scholars came to Britain. But sometimes the mobility was involuntary, as scholars were forced to flee from their homelands to escape the threat of persecution and death. Thomas Cranmer, who had become Henry VIII's Archbishop of Canterbury, a position he held throughout Edward VI's reign and into Mary's, he'd studied in Germany and, illegally, married a Lutheran wife. Martin Bucer, the reformer of Strasbourg, came to be a lecturer in Cambridge. In Edward VI's reign, Protestant scholars fled to England, and under Mary, the flight was in the other direction. Actually, evidence suggests that foreign Protestant refugees started to come to England as early as the reign of Henry VIII, and at the time of his death, we know that there were communities of foreign Protestants in such widely dispersed areas as Glastonbury, Canterbury, and London. Although the majority of these were what we would now call Reformed, they did include some Lutherans. In 1550, at the suggestion of Archbishop Thomas Cranmer, Edward VI granted permission for these foreigners to establish their own congregation. Known as the Temple of the Lord Jesus, it was an Ecclesia Peregrinorum, or Stranger's Church. This congregation was granted letters patent, which assigned to them the revenues and freehold of an old Augustinian chapel, known simply as Austin Friars, which was situated in Broad Street. The letters patent allowed these foreigners or strangers to conduct services in their own languages and according to their own church orders. The church that they used must have come as a surprise to the austere Reformed Christians who prized simplicity in worship above all things. It was an enormous church, built so magnificently so long ago by pious Catholics. Yet it responded well to their congregational singing, just as it had done to the monks' plain song. This church became a haven for French, Walloon, Flemish and German Protestant refugees who worshipped under one roof. The Germans in the church were what we would call Niederdeutschen, or Low Germans. There were four ministers, two for the French-speaking, two for the German-speaking congregations, and above them was a superintendent. He was a Polish nobleman named Jan Łaski, who's usually better known by his westernised name, John Alasco, and he was a friend of Luther's colleague, Philip Melanchthon. Alasco is one of the lesser-known leaders of the second phase of the Reformation, which gave birth to the Reformed churches. These theologians and churchmen looked to John Calvin in Geneva rather than to Martin Luther and his successors in Wittenberg. They were far more radical in their approach to reform than Luther and his colleagues had been. Alasco was born in 1499 in Poland, studied in Bologna, and then in 1523 visited Basel, where he stayed in the home of the great Dutch humanist Desiderius Erasmus. Although he developed some sympathies with the views of the reformers, he at first remained a Roman Catholic and even became a bishop. In 1538 he was appointed Archdeacon of Warsaw, but shortly afterwards openly affirmed his belief in Protestant teaching. He left Poland and, going by way of Germany, made his way to East Friesland, where he was appointed as pastor of a Reformed congregation in Emden in 1542. He became a friend of the English Calvinist John Hooper, who later became Bishop of Gloucester and Worcester. Through him, he got to know Thomas Cranmer. who invited him to come to England in 1548 to advise on the reforms being proposed for the Church of England. After a brief period back in Emden, he returned to England as superintendent of the Strangers' Church. From the very beginning, the Strangers' Church was run on strictly reformed lines, and its members came from what are now Belgium, the Netherlands, France, and some parts of Germany. The refugees who made up the congregation in this church saw themselves as having a form of church order that was more in keeping with apostolic practice than the Church of England. In a letter to the Swiss reformer Bullinger, one of its ministers, Martin Macronius, expressed his gratitude to the discreet and godly king who most diligently purifies and gathers together the Church of Christ. He thanked Edward for granting them the Austin Friars Church, where they may have a pure ministry of word and sacraments according to apostolic form. He praised John Alasco, by whose aid alone under God we foreigners have arrived at our present state of pure religion. Macronius also noted, however, that the Bishop of London, Nicholas Ridley, was opposed to the theology and practices of the congregation. However, he went on to mention the Archbishop of Canterbury, the especial patron of foreigners, and his support for the church, which surprised and astonished some people. But, said Macronius, God can make use of all persons to the advancement of his glory. We should not, however, consider the Strangers' Church as a haven of toleration. The church order precluded membership by people who deviated from the narrow path of good Reformed theology, and the congregational authorities were zealous in their pursuit of supposed heretics. A case in point is that of a certain Georg von Paris, a refugee from the Netherlands, who was branded as an Arian, that's to say, someone who subscribed to the teachings of the 4th-century African theologian Arius, who maintained that Jesus was not God. Van Paris was no theologian, but a simple, unlettered man, who nevertheless led a blameless life. In 1551, he was arrested with the agreement of the congregation, examined by Cranmer and Ridley, found guilty, refused to recant, and was burned at Smithfield in April 1551. In the reign of Queen Mary I, the congregation was suppressed and the majority of its members fled abroad, mostly to Frankfurt am Main. Alasco was one of the ones who left, and he eventually died in Poland in 1560. Many of the congregation returned when Elizabeth ascended the throne in 1558, and she allowed them to resume worshipping at Austin Friars. In 1560, Austin Friars became a purely Dutch church, and the French set up their own congregation just round the corner in St. Anthony's Church in Threadneedle Street. What is interesting is that Elizabeth organised matters rather differently from the way in which Thomas Cranmer had done. Now, the Bishop of London, Edmund Grindal, was given a supervisory role, although for the most part he left the congregation to its own devices and only intervened if there was dissent. Grindal was also responsible for the supervision of the Italian and Spanish Protestant communities in London. Both of these Strangers' Churches took church discipline and pastoral care very seriously, and anyone wishing to join the congregation had to prove that they were sincere in their faith and were prepared to live a sober and godly life. The congregation was originally run by a council of 8 elders, the number of which was raised to 12 in 1571. These men were responsible for ensuring that members were kept under a proper discipline. For example, if a member failed to attain communion or was known to be ill, the elder responsible for the area would go and visit him. In the case of illness, then medical care could be arranged. For example, there was a dreadful outbreak of plague in 1563, and the Dutch church appointed a paid surgeon to look after those who were sick. Similarly, a tight control was exercised in the area of marriage. A young couple who wanted to marry had to go through a formal service of betrothal in front of the minister or elder, and they had to prove that they had no prior liaison and that they had the consent of their parents. Elders reserved the right to advise either party that they might be making a wrong choice. If a member had financial problems or wanted to write a will, which, according to English law at the time, needed to be translated from Dutch to Latin, then two members of the congregation were there to offer advice. In the case of a will, an elder or a notary often witnessed the document and acted as executor. Loans were available from the church for various reasons, such as bringing over a wife and family to England or to start a new business. Commercial disputes within the community could be settled internally. If there was a sudden crisis, a member could apply for payment from the poor box, and both congregations had poor houses. The money for all of these services came from energetic fundraising campaigns, and there were, from time to time, contributions from sympathetic Englishmen. An interesting example of this occurred in 1572, when Edmund Grindal, the Bishop of London, gave the French church the sum of £320. Although the Dutch and French churches were similar in most crucial respects, they differed significantly in their membership. The French congregation had much more diplomatic clout, and they could muster men who would be likely to be accepted in the English court and in political circles, and where they could lobby on behalf of their cause. The Dutch church, on the other hand, had more economic clout, as witnessed by the fact that in 1592 there were complaints of harassment of Flemish silk twisters, who employed more than 1,000 English workers. Their economic clout meant that they had to be listened to. Worship in the Austin Friars Strangers Church has continued right down to the present day. Like all congregations, it has had times of great prosperity, but it's also had harder times. The original church was destroyed during the Second World War, but in 1950, Princess Irena of the Netherlands laid the foundation stone for the present church, which now stands as a reminder of those first non-Anglican Protestant congregations in England. And so to the last stage of our journey. We move to St. Anne and St. Agnes Church. From the Dutch church, turn back down Austin Friars and turn immediately right by the Phoenix Public House into Throgmorton Street. Continue straight along the road for about 5 minutes as it turns into Lethbury and then Gresham Street. Near the end of Gresham Street, you'll see St. Anne and St. Agnes on your right. And for more than 40 years, this was the home to several Lutheran congregations with worshippers of more than 30 nationalities. The second German-speaking Lutheran congregation to come into existence dates from 1694, when St. Mary's Lutheran congregation was established to the west of the City of London. The actual circumstances relating to the establishment of this congregation are rather confusing, but it seems that in 1692, Germans living in Westminster had not been allowed to vote in the election of a new pastor in Holy Trinity. These people were, quite naturally, rather offended by this, and they seceded from the original congregation. There also seems to have been some disagreement about the appointment of an assistant pastor in Holy Trinity. Of course, these Germans who had seceded from Holy Trinity had no church building of their own and needed a place to worship in. One of their supporters, the Duke of Braunschweig-Celler, interceded on their behalf with King William III, who initially granted them permission to use some rooms in the Savoy Palace. The palace was situated between the present-day embankment and the Strand on the northern approach to Waterloo Bridge. Originally, it had been a manor house built by Duke Peter of Savoy in 1245, but it had passed into the possession of the English royal family and become the property of the Duchy of Lancaster. Since it belonged to the Crown, it was deemed to be extra parochial and therefore did not come under the jurisdiction of the Bishop of London. Since 1660, it had been home to a French Protestant congregation, and even, under the Roman Catholic King James II, to a Jesuit community. It was, in fact, the former Jesuit chapel which eventually became home to this new German congregation, known henceforth as the German-speaking Evangelical Lutheran Church of St. Mary le Savoy. The congregation's new home was solemnly consecrated on the 14th of October in 1694 by a certain pastor Crusius, who had been duly elected as the congregation's first pastor. Over the next two centuries, St. Mary's flourished and provided a church home for many of the German-speaking Lutheran population of London. Not only did it provide a centre of worship, but for much of the time it also provided an education for their children by maintaining a school. In 1776, the members built a new church in the Savoy, but in the latter part of the 19th century, the church had to relocate. The Duchy of Lancaster decided to demolish the Savoy Palace so that the new embankment and the new railway station could be built. A new church, consecrated on the 29th of July 1877, was built in Cleveland Street, opposite the Middlesex Hospital. But this was destroyed on the nights of the 18th and 26th of September 1940 in air raids. Weeks before, in April, the pastor of that congregation, Friedrich Wehran, had been interned, so the congregation found itself with neither church nor pastor. In 1941, the congregation asked Dr. Hans Herbert Cram to begin taking services. Dr. Cram had come to Oxford in 1938 to study in Mansfield College, and there he had completed his doctoral thesis on the teachings of Martin Luther. This was later published as a book entitled The Theology of Martin Luther. While in Oxford, he had built up a strong congregation of refugees from National Socialist Germany. He continued to look after this congregation while coming to London to take services twice a month. He was officially called to be the pastor of St. Mary's on the 21st of March 1943. After the war ended, an urgent search began for new premises, and the congregation was eventually successful in finding an old mission chapel in Sandwich Street, close to St. Pancras Station. This is the site, which is now jointly shared by St. Mary's and the International Lutheran Student Centre. Before, during, and after the Second World War, there was a massive influx of German-speaking people into England, and in particular into London. These included refugees fleeing from Germany, ex-prisoners of war, au pair girls, German women married to British soldiers, and volunteer workers. They included not only people from Germany proper, but also from German-speaking minorities in other English-speaking countries. Alongside these, there were also many Lutherans of other nationalities, including growing numbers of overseas students. To cater for them, and for the growing number of mixed-marriage families, Dr. Cram introduced a monthly service in English. It didn't take long for the congregation to realise that a monthly English service was not sufficient to meet the needs of the growing English-speaking community. However, it was clearly not possible for Dr. Cram to take on more responsibilities, because he was, by now, also the pastor of the Hamburg Lutheran Church, that first Lutheran congregation in England. So in 1953, a pastor from Canada, Herbert Otto Hartig, was called to be his assistant. Pastor Hartig conducted weekly services in English in the building shared with the German-speaking congregation. But this was obviously not a permanent solution, and in October 1956, an independent congregation, known as St. John's Evangelical Lutheran Congregation, came into being, holding its services at the Lutheran Church House in South Kensington. Lutherans in Great Britain owe an enormous debt to Dr. Cram and to his successor, Pastor Gottfried Klapper, both of whom were firm in maintaining their Lutheran faith and in their understanding of the need for a Lutheran ministry in Britain in the English language. The City of London played a prominent part in the early history of Lutherans in this country. As we've already heard, one of its first martyrs, Robert Barnes, was burned at the stake in Smithfield in 1540. The first Strangers' Church was established in Austin Friars in 1548. And the first Lutheran congregation was built in Trinity Lane, close by St. Paul's Cathedral, in 1672. It seems only fitting, therefore, that Lutherans should have come back to the city in the 21st century, and that in an age of increased ecumenical cooperation, they should have found a home in a disused Anglican church. St. Anne and St. Agnes Church in Gresham Street nestles in a quiet corner of the city in between St. Paul's Cathedral and the Museum of London. Although it's first mentioned in a document of 1275, it's very likely that it dates back to the 11th century and is unique among the churches of the City of London in having a double dedication. It's dedicated to St. Anne, who, according to one of the early apocryphal Christian writings, was the mother of Jesus' mother, Mary, and to St. Agnes, a rather obscure Roman martyr who has been venerated since the 4th century. At one time in its history, the church was called St. Anne in the Willows, which points to how different medieval London was from the metropolis that we know today. Like so many other churches, St. Anne and St. Agnes was almost completely destroyed during the Great Fire of 1666, although the original tower survived. During the subsequent restoration of the city, it was rebuilt to a design by Sir Christopher Wren and rededicated in November 1680. At that time it was united with the parish of St. John Zachary, which was one of the churches which was not rebuilt. Between then and the Second World War, it underwent several changes and restorations, but was destroyed by incendiary bombs during an air raid on the 29th of December 1940. Just as with the Great Fire of London, so the air raid damage of the Second World War left the Diocese of London with many churches that had been gutted. To many people, it was obvious that these churches should be rebuilt, just as they had been towards the end of the 17th century. But circumstances had changed. Whereas the city of Charles II was a bustling and thriving metropolis, the London of the second half of the 20th century had changed beyond recognition. True, the historic buildings such as St. Paul's Cathedral and the Tower of London, the Bank of England and the Guildhall were still there, but most of the people had long ago left for the suburbs. Although the city continued to live and thrive as one of the world's great commercial centres, many of the city churches were left with no resident parishioners, and on Sundays the streets were left to the few remaining residents and the thousands of tourists who flocked to London every year. Among the many Lutherans who found homes in England after 1945 were hundreds of Estonians and Latvians. These had settled in many different places in Great Britain and Ireland. In the larger centres of settlement, including London, they had established congregations and held regular services, often worshipping in buildings borrowed from other denominations, especially the Church of England. In the early 1960s, the deans of the Estonian and Latvian Lutheran churches approached the authorities of the Diocese of London with a request to find a church building that they could both use for services, and within a very short time they were offered St. Anne and St. Agnes, which was being rebuilt. After the air raid that had destroyed it, the walls and towers had remained standing, and a temporary cover had been provided by an iron roof. However, there had been a lot more damage because of exposure to the elements, and rebuilding was a major task. The cost of the rebuilding was borne by the Diocese of London, but with a substantial input from the Lutheran World Federation. The rebuilding started in 1963, and within 3 years the church was completely refurbished and restored with great attention to original detail. Finally, on the 23rd of April 1966, St. George's Day, the church was rehallowed by the Bishop of London and handed over to the stewardship of the Lutheran congregations on a long-term lease. Symbolising the very international character of the Lutheran community in Britain, 11 languages were used in the service, and the sermon was preached by the Bishop of Lübeck, the Right Reverend Heinrich Meyer. From the beginning, it was agreed that St. John's Evangelical Lutheran Congregation, the English congregation founded by Hans Herbert Cram, would worship in St. Anne and St. Agnes. So every Sunday there was a weekly service in English and a service in the afternoon in either Estonian or Latvian. This is still the basic pattern, but the English-speaking congregation, which changed its name in 1988 to St. Anne's Evangelical Lutheran Church, also had a regular Sunday evening service as well, and had given birth to very active Amharic and Swahili-speaking congregations. The congregation became very well known, not only because it provided a central place of worship for Lutherans in London, but also because successive pastors had encouraged the activities of St. Anne's Music Society, which provided high-quality musical concerts on a regular basis. So, until 2012, thanks to the generous ecumenical spirit of the Church of England and the loyal support of the members of the congregations who worshipped in St. Anne and St. Agnes, Lutherans were back in the heart of the City of London.
Thank you for listening to A Lutheran Walk Through London with Pastor Roy Long. If you have any questions or comments about any issues raised in this program, write an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. Check Lutheran Radio's program online and stay tuned.